Welcome to this week's episode of Active Healthy Aging. I'm your host, Coach Ken. Each week, we will be discussing practical health and fitness strategies and topics to help you regain, maintain, or improve your health and movement practice. Ultimately, our goal is to empower you to create a personal movement practice that will support your activities of daily living, make you fall resistant, and living independently for as long as possible. This week's movement concept, training all three muscle actions. Well, first of all, you're probably shaking your head and wondering, what other muscle actions are there besides just contracting? This is certainly a valid question and one that has been used to test many advanced degree candidates during their oral exams. During the exam process, a candidate might be asked, what is the only action a muscle can perform? And the correct answer to that would be it can only contract or shorten. But there's more to muscle action than just contracting. Stay with me now. You'll see when we were in school, we were studying the human body and were likely asked to describe what different major muscles do in the body. For example, our biceps flex the arm, our quadriceps extend the knee, our hamstring flexes the leg, our triceps extend the arm. All of these are true, but each of these muscle groups also perform two other vital and often untrained functions, and that's what I'd like to bring to your attention today. Before I explain the other two muscle group actions, I want to just take a short backstory of how anatomists originally came to generally describe the function of prime mover muscles in the body. First, back in the time of ancient Greece, there are actually a few recorded references of cadaver dissections in which artists and metaphysicians and so forth were able to actually examine the origin and insertion of muscles and made observations based on that. In Leonardo da Vinci's time in the 1500s, it was generally illegal for medical students and artists to study human cadavers. Scientists like da Vinci took huge risks to exhume bodies and study human anatomy. Studying cadavers, however, only reveals the primary contraction or shortening aspect of the muscle. It wasn't until fairly recently that physical therapists and anatomists began to observe and appreciate how some muscles can actually demonstrate two other actions, and that's what I want to share with you. When it came to the larger prime mover muscles like the biceps, triceps, hamstrings, quadriceps, they observed that they were arranged in opposing pairs, each performing what they believed to be an opposite action. If they flex the arm, the biceps shorten. If they triceps and the triceps lengthen, and when they extended the arm, the triceps shortened and the biceps lengthened. So let's look at two other muscle actions and how and why you might consider integrating these into your own personal movement practice. The traditional flexion extension patterns we just mentioned with the biceps and triceps are examples of concentric contractions. In other words, the muscle shortens during the contraction. Pretty straightforward and pretty well understood by most people. Now, when a muscle is in a contracted non-moving position, we call it an isometric contraction. As an example, say you were carrying a bag of groceries with your arms bent 90 degrees. Your biceps are being required to maintain that isometric contraction for a duration of time. This isometric contraction is used in many daily activities, so it makes sense to integrate some of this type of work into your movement practice. The third muscle action is called an eccentric contraction. This is where the muscle is already in a contracted or shortened state and then is slowly lengthened under tension as it can't resist a counter force that's greater than the ability to contract. So let's go back to our carrying our bag of groceries using an isometric contraction. It's probably not that challenging to carry a bag of groceries out to your car in the parking lot. But what if you had to carry that bag for a mile? As your arms fatigued, your biceps would slowly lengthen while in that contracted state. A more dramatic example could be where you hold your arms out to accept a load, and I mean a pretty heavy load, maybe a bag of cement, something really heavy. And as they place the load on your arms, you might fight to keep your arms up, but it's just too heavy, and they slowly lower down under tension. Another common example of an eccentric contraction is when you get sore thighs from a lot of downhill hiking. You see, as you step down, your quads are contracting, trying to decelerate your forward momentum. Again, they are being stretched while in this contracted state. This is a somewhat painful example of how challenging eccentric contractions or this deceleration can be. Interestingly, eccentric muscle contractions are capable of producing greater force than concentric actions. In other words, that lengthening under tension produces more actual foot pounds of force than you can when you're exerting force trying to pick up a weight or move a heavy object. This is a rather counterintuitive concept. You might think that muscles would reach their maximal force production during a concentric contraction, but it's the force created while lengthening under tension which has the greater force potential. This lengthening under tension is what causes micro tears in the muscle tissue and results in a fairly predictable soreness the next day that exercise physiologists call DOMS, or use the acronym DOMS, D-O-M-S, which stands for delayed onset of muscle soreness. So now you have an acronym you can throw onto those sore legs after a long hike, especially if you ended with a long downhill section. The relevance for this, all of us active, healthy agers, is to develop a strong deceleration strength to help us resist or catch ourselves with our hands and arms if necessary. If you start to lose your balance and step forward, step out to catch yourself, that deceleration is an eccentric contraction at work. Now let's talk about how to integrate these three muscle actions into your own private movement practice. To illustrate how to integrate these movements into your daily practice, we can apply a specific cadence to virtually any movement that you would be doing. So first, what do I mean by cadence? It's simply the speed at which a movement is performed, much like a musician uses a metronome. Let's take a bodyweight squat as an example. Most people would push their hips back, bend their knees, and lower down to a parallel thigh and back up at a cadence close to what we would call a 1-0-1. In other words, it took them 1 second to get down. They didn't pause at the bottom and they came right back up. And hence the count of 1-0-1. Now, if you slow down the lowering or eccentric phase to 4 counts, then hold isometrically in the lower position for 2 counts, and then come back up in 1 count, we now have a cadence of what we refer to as a 4-2-1 cadence. This means we're taking 7 seconds to complete 1 repetition. So it's 4 counts, 4 seconds to lower, 2 seconds isometrically holding at a parallel thigh position, and 1 second to return to the top. Whereas a natural squat would only take 2 or 3 seconds as opposed to 7. Hearing this might not seem like much of a distinction, but give it a try and I think you'll understand how challenging this can be. Let's say you're going to do 10 bodyweight squats at a 1-0-1 cadence. Down in one, no rest or stop, and right back up. 10 squats would take you about 20 to 30 seconds. Now, if we apply this slower cadence, this 4-2-1 cadence, down in four counts, hold for two at the bottom, and back up in one, those 10 reps are going to take you 70 seconds. So remember, that's 7 seconds per rep. That's over twice the time under tension, which is a term that exercise physiologists and trainers like to focus on. How much time is the muscle actually under tension? And we've incorporated a controlled eccentric lowering phase in this 4-2-1 cadence, an isometric pause, and then a normal concentric or contraction of the quads to get back up. Remember, one of the critical elements of fall resistance is to have sufficient eccentric or deceleration strength to catch ourselves. By following this type of 4-2-1 cadence, you will develop great control of your movement. Most of us just tend to focus on the concentric or the normal force production or coming up phase, but by slowing down, stopping at the bottom before coming up, we really add to our margin of safety. Now let's apply this to both a pushing and pulling movement. First, let's look at a push-up. And this can be a leaning type push-up where maybe you're leaning against a countertop or all the way down to a traditional push-up from the floor. Starting in the up position with your arms extended, hovering above the floor, you lower down, taking 4 seconds. Then hovering your chest just off the ground for 2 seconds before returning to the starting position. I think you're starting to feel what I'm describing here as being much more challenging than just banging them out one after the other. There's a time for that, but what the goal is with this type of exercise is to really emphasize that deceleration phase. The same cadence can be applied to a pulling motion like a body row. If you're not familiar with a body row, it's basically a movement that is the opposite of a push-up. You can hang on to a low bar at a playground about waist height with your back facing down towards the ground or floor, and you'll be pulling your chest up to touch the bar. Actually, it's more like a reverse bench press, I guess. Okay, everyone have that visual? Great. Now, this time the cadence will be 1-2-4. I know that sounds confusing, but stay with me here. Because the concentric or pulling motion is first, we're only going to take 1 second to bring our chest up to the bar. Then we're going to hold for 2 seconds, and then we're going to lower back down 4 seconds. So we're pulling up, touch the chest, hold for two, and then lowering down 4 seconds. If you're familiar with suspension type training, like a TRX, for example, you can adjust your body angle to make it easier, harder, rather than using a fixed bar as I described. So give this a try for about 6 to 8 weeks and really try to be strict with your counting. This will give you a solid strength spectrum of both of concentric, isometric, and eccentric strength as a solid foundation. In the next episode, I'll be discussing how this foundation phase, where we're going slower, can lead us into more advanced strength and power phases of training, if that's of interest to you. In the meantime, slow down, work those three muscle actions, concentric, isometric, and eccentric, and feel your strength and confidence improve. This week's wellness thought, the mind is like a parachute. It works best when it's open. This quote is from Frank Zappa, the iconic musician, activist, and filmmaker. If you would indulge me for a moment, I'd like to share a societal observation. In our modern world, we tend literally to be bombarded with information on a daily basis or even minute by minute basis from a wide variety of sources. Mostly, this barrage attempts to get us to buy something or influence our opinion about a particular subject. You can fill in the blank. It seems to me that many are just looking for more evidence to support our particular viewpoint. Just like in the previous topic about slowing down our movement cadence, maybe it's worthwhile to slow down our knee-jerk reactions to our hot-button topics. And yes, we all have them, don't we? By slowing down our reactive mind and opening up to at least critically thinking about a particular subject, we can create an opening to honestly evaluate conflicting viewpoints civilly. Even if it doesn't change your mind, at least you're open to a different perspective. You are listening to Active Healthy Aging on KCIW 100.7 FM, Brookings, Oregon. This week's regeneration topic is about water walking and water running. I know there are a lot of active healthy agers out there that have some movement challenges due to a variety of circumstances. These might include back pain, arthritic joints, neuropathy, and/or general stiffness. For those of you experiencing chronic pain when you walk or during traditional exercise, you might consider hitting the pool. The primary benefit of water exercise is that it reduces the amount of body weight, therefore gravity, experienced by the bones and muscles. This can allow those of us with painful joints to still move through healthy ranges of motion without the impact of land-based movements. Let's look at a continuum of impact from the least impact to more impact. You've probably seen or tried a flotation belt or vest before. Whichever flotation device you choose, you should be able to float vertically so that the water comes up to about the tops of your shoulders. Obviously, this requires a deeper water section of the pool. Then, all you need to do is start moving in a walking or running gait. Be sure you use your arms in conjunction with your legs, just like you would on land. You can play around with the speed of your gait, even doing intervals where you're doing a little bit of work, say alternating between 30 seconds of fast walking or running and 30 seconds of slow recovery, or just walking at a steady pace for 15 to 20 minutes in the pool in that suspended situation. Moving along the continuum, for those of you that can tolerate a little more impact, you can try walking in the shallow end of the pool about waist to chest height, and again, use those arms. You will need to wear appropriate footwear for this type of movement, like aqua socks or some other non-marking shoe. This type of movement can range from easy walking, jogging, skipping, or even sprinting. Injured athletes have used water movement like this to allow them to stay active while recovering from an injury, and the added resistance of the water itself can be surprisingly challenged, so don't be surprised if you get fatigued rather quickly. Hopefully, someday our community here in Brookings will have a year-round pool facility to offer a variety of water-based classes, especially for older adults and even the kids that live in and around the water in our beautiful part of the state and really could benefit from being more confident swimmers and just being confident in general in the water. This week's fitness truth, half-truth, or lie. Actually, I never do lies, but it just sounds good, I guess, to say it that way. This is sort of a half-truth, and it's the phrase, "I'll get big muscles if I lift weights." Now, I'm not making fun of this belief, but it is rather pervasive and curious to me, especially among females. I'm not trying to be provocative here regarding this gender bias statement. It's simply a common response that I receive from new students to my classes. And when I try to get them to consider using a little more weight or resistance during class. At least today, young women have more access to dance, gymnastics, and sports training thanks to Title IX, but there still seems to be concern about strength training when it comes to getting large, bulky muscles. For the majority of you listening, and I'm assuming most of you are probably of an older age, we are actually losing muscle mass yearly. One of the primary concerns should probably be to preserve as much of your muscle mass as possible as we age. As far as building muscle at this stage of the game, it's honestly very, very difficult without the aid of growth hormone, testosterone, etc. You can, however, maintain what you have with adequate resistance while performing big bang movements like squats, deadlifts, pull-ups, push-ups. Notice I strategically omitted movements like bicep curls, tricep extensions, etc. You've got to work more of the whole body type movements, so squatting and pressing at the same time, where you're really loading the whole body and challenging it in a way that is more functional. That is, of course, if it's appropriate for you. And if it is, then don't be afraid to add a little more weight or resistance. Once you've mastered your body weight in various movements, it may be appropriate for you to add some more weight or resistance. As a very rough rule of thumb for strength training, try to use weight that you can get at least 6 to 8 repetitions if you're working on pure strength. This means you can complete 6 reps for sure, but you could not complete more than 8 reps. So you're literally going to fatigue at 8. If strength is the goal and your form is solid, don't be afraid to add some resistance. Remember, your muscles are only going to respond to whatever challenge you give them. No challenge, no gain in strength. This week's fitness fun fact is a question I get quite often about using hand or ankle weights. So are they good or bad for adding to your movement practice? I know that this may be a little controversial, but please remember back to our wellness thought about keeping an open mind. First, it is true that if you add weight to your body and walk, you will burn a few more calories than if you're just carrying your normal body weight. At issue here is not whether adding weight is a problem, but where we are adding the weight and how it affects our gait pattern. Holding weights in the hands, on the wrists, or ankles loads the far ends of our extremities, our arms and legs, which in turn alters our gait mechanics. Because of repetitive nature of walking, this altered gait can lead to joint problems. So, there is a difference between, say, a baseball batter swinging a weighted bat a few times before going up to the plate and a player that would use that same weighted bat throughout batting practice. Not that they could do that, but you get the idea. It would completely mess up their timing when they swung a normal bat. So, if you want to add weight to your body, use a resistance vest or a weighted vest. This is the best way to do it. And there's a lot of good vests out there these days that are completely adjustable. They fit very snugly. I've used one that goes up to 40 pounds, and tactical operations type military, police, and so forth will use these weighted vests. You can tumble with them. They stay very snug to your body. So if you're interested in adding more weight while you're doing your walking, I would recommend that you do it in the form of a weighted vest. So as we finish up the show today, I want to remind you that you're listening to Active Healthy Aging on KCIW 100.7 on the FM dial. I'm Coach Ken, and I want to pass along our standard disclaimer at this point that the information and opinions expressed on this show are for informational and entertainment purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, and/or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or healthcare provider regarding any medical issue you may be experiencing. Until next time, be well, be fit.